Past week, we celebrated Yom Yerushalayim, and on a personal note, I come from a family that's very much associated with the city of Yerushalayim. Among our ancestors, perhaps the most notable, famous one was somebody by the name of Rabbi Yosher Rivlin, who was one of the first people who helped to establish housing and communities outside of the walled city of Yerushalayim.
Prime Minister's name.
If you know the president's name. So he's a cousin, yeah. So if you go to Nachlat Shiva, which is right near Rehov Solomon, so Yoel Moshe Solomon and Yosef Rivlin were the partners in building these neighborhoods. They have a little memorial there, a commemorative stone there. And so the city of Yerushalayim, which we celebrated this past week on Sundays, Yerushalayim, is something that has a special place in our heart. Obviously, it has a special place in everybody's heart. And we were saddened to hear yesterday of our cousin, Ruby Rivlin's wife passing away, Nechama Bat Mendi Drora. I did a little research to find out her parents' names. And so we want to dedicate this year in her memory because this year is also really about Yerushalayim. Last week, we took a look at the very curious story of the conquest of Yerushalayim, which you have in front of you on page one, or it's actually page three because I continued from last week, and opposite you have the translation. And it's a very weird story. And just to recap quickly what we did last week, we noted that in Divrei HaYamim, which is the book of Tanakh, which is written in Beit Sheni, and which addresses the issues that are presented in Sefer Shmuel and Melachim, but presents a lot of different information. It essentially ignores the Northern Kingdom. It essentially ignores any of David's pitfalls, including the whole Bathsheba Uriah thing. It highlights the city of Yerushalayim in ways that are not done there. And the very famous line, for instance, about that David couldn't build the Mikdash because his hands were filled with blood is only in Divrei Hayamim. It doesn't appear in Shmuel or Melachim. And a lot more things that in which Divrei Hayamim plays a sort of an interpretive kind of role on Sefer Melachim. In this story, we saw last week that some of the real difficulties in the text were cleaned up. So, for instance, the stuff you see in big print here about the lame and the blind, which we'll talk about in detail, just don't appear there at all in that story. And then there's another sentence that seems to be fractured, and it gets unfractured in Divrei Hayamim. The reason I'm pointing that out is because this passage is so difficult, so thorny, that already as early as Divrei Hayamim, there's clearly an attempt to try to smooth over the difficulties and make it readable. So we're going to read the text. I'll mention then what Divrei Hayamim does. We had it last week in the text. But I wanted, and last week what we did is we looked at just the difficulties in the text, which I'll review, and some of the suggestions as to what's going on. We're going to look at it from a fresh perspective today and see where it takes us. So the preface to this, which is Shmuel Bet Perakeh, just to give us the context, is that David, if you recall, had been anointed by Shmuel, and as a result of that, Shaul became melancholy and seemingly bipolar or something, and David went on the run. Shaul was chasing him. Finally, David took refuge in Plishti land, and ultimately Shaul was killed in battle. And at that point, David asked Hashem what he should do, and Hashem said, "Go up to Hebron." He went to Hebron, which is the capital city of his tribe, of Yehuda, and the people of Yehuda recognized him as their leader, and he was anointed as their leader and remained as their leader. And then at some later point, this next piece happens. Here we go. "Vayavo kol shivtei Yisrael el David Chevrona, v'emru lehem or hinenu atzmacha v'sacha anachnu." So everybody now comes, all the tribes come to David. Now remember, the tribes have not really been united at any point since Yehoshua. "Gam et mol gam shoshom b'yot Shaul melech aleinu atah hayita amotziv amoivi et Yisrael." Even when Shaul was king, you were the guy who was leading us into battle. "Vayomar Adonai lecha atah tira et ami et Yisrael v'atah tira negid al Yisrael." And God told you to be the king. Right, since I'm shortcutting it. "Vayavokos in Israel hamelech Chevrona." So they come to Chevron. "Vayichrot lahem hamelech David brit b'chevron lifnei Adonai." So David makes a brit with them in the presence of God. So they invoke God's name and they make a brit, a covenant, essentially about loyalty to David and accepting David as their king. "Vayimshechu et David hamelech al-Yisrael." And then they anoint him, which is now the third time he's been anointed. He was anointed earlier by Shmuel, sort of on the sly, and then he was anointed when he came to Hebron by the people of Yehuda, and now here. Now, this is a recap, it jumps way to the end of his career. Ben Shloshim Shana, David Vimacho, Abayim Shana Malach. David ruled at the age of 30, which means this is now when he steps into this position. He's 30, and he rules for 40 years. The truth is that this actually starts a little beforehand, because Bechavron Malach al Yehuda Sheva Shanim Shachor Hashim. Now remember, he'd been in Hebron for a while. And he ruled in Hebron for 7 years and a half. Right? Uvishalai Malach Shloshim Shalosh Shana Kol Yisrael Yehuda. So he ruled over Yehuda from Hebron for 7.5 years. And then we assume at the end of that 7.5 years, all these people came to David and said, we want you to be the king over all of us. And then he ruled from Yerushalayim for 33 years. Now, to quote the Gemara, to paraphrase the Gemara, Yerushalayim man dachar shmei. Whoever mentioned Yerushalayim here? In other words, Yerushalayim comes out of nowhere. In other words, I understand he's ruling in Hebron. We say he ruled in Hebron for 7.5 years. And then you could add, and then he ruled over everybody from Hebron. Why is it automatically assumed he goes to Yerushalayim? And the choice of Yerushalayim itself is going to be somewhat mysterious here. Divrei Hayamim is the one who makes the identification of Yerushalayim as being Har HaMoriah, the site of the Akedah, but that of course starts in Divrei Hayamim. So why does David go to Yerushalayim? Well, I'll make a suggestion about that in the context of this whole piece. All right. So far, this is pretty much what it says in Divrei Hayamim also. But here's where it gets strange. Vayelach HaMelech Vanashav Yerushalayim. Now, we assume that we're reading the story about a war, a conquest. But look at the wording. Vayelach HaMelech Vanashav Yerushalayim. What does that mean? The king and his people went to Yerushalayim. It doesn't say they set up a camp against Yerushalayim. It doesn't mean they besieged Yerushalayim. They went to Yerushalayim. El HaYivusi Yoshev HaAretz. And who did they go to? The Jebusites who live in the land. We're going to get the history of this. Vayomer David Lemor. And he, we assume that means the Yivusim, said to David, Lo Tavohena, you can't come here. Now, normally in a war, it doesn't work that way. I'm coming to attack you. You don't get the defender say, no, we're not letting you in. So this sounds not like a war. Lo Tavohena, Kim Hesircha HaIvrim BaPischin Lemor. Unless you get rid of the lame and the blind, pretty much connects with what you guys were just talking about, saying, Lo Yavo David Hena, saying, David can't come here. What is this? Who are the lame and the blind? What's the problem? We talked about this last week a little bit, and I shared some of the traditional approaches and some of the modern approaches to who the Ivrim and Pischim and what the issue is. Vayakon David Mitzvat Zion. He ear David. And then we hear that David conquers, sounds like there's a war going on, and he conquers a fortress, an acropolis, Mitzvat Zion, and it's called Ir David. It sounds like there's Ir David, which is Mitzvat Zion, which he conquers, and there's Yerushalayim, which has this lame and blind problem, and that they're two separate things. And then, Vayoma David Bayomahu, Al Komakevu Si V'yegam Batzinor. This is the weirdest line, and we're going to have to deal with the Tzinor at some future time because there's too much here. But he says, anybody who smites a Yevusi will then touch the pipe. I hear it's some other comment that they'll have to go up through the pipe, that they'll be hit by a pipe. It's unclear what it means. And then, V'ta Pischim V'ta Ivrim Snuei Nefesh David. And then there's again a mention of the lame and the blind, who David hates. Al-Kain Yomru, Iver Ofiseach, Lo Yavo Labayit. And that's why they say the lame and the blind can't come into the house. Now, Divrei Hayamim ignores all this. It doesn't mention the Ivrim Pischim. It simply says, Lo Tavohena, you can't come here. David then says, Kol Makei Yevusi, anybody who smites the Yevusi. And then what is added, which is missing here, is, will become the captain. And then it says, Yoav goes and smites the Yevusi. That's how he becomes David's chief of staff. Shalom Yisrael. Divrei Hayamim makes this a very simple story. It's an attack on Yerushalayim. The people in Yerushalayim say, you can't come here. David says, first person to go up and smite the Yevusi will become my captain. Yoav does, becomes the captain. That's it. It's very simple. But we're dealing with Sefer Shmuel. Far more mysterious. So I posed a couple questions at the bottom, right, which is, why did David go to Yerushalayim at all? What is the whole thing with the blind and the lame? Who are they? What does it mean they can't come in and he can't come in? And then, why are they called Snuei Nefesh David? The ones who can't, who David hates, can't come into the house. What house? What is this all about? So we look in Tanakh, and we look at the history of Yerushalayim, we find something very strange. If you're coming into a land, and there is a spot which for strategic, ritual, aesthetic reasons, whatever it might be, resource reasons, you really want, you attack it. You try to maybe negotiate. If that doesn't work, you attack. If the attack doesn't work, maybe you regroup and you reattack, or else you give up on it. One thing you don't do is attack it successfully, conquer it, and walk away. Doesn't make any sense. And yet, let's look at the history of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim starts in Yehoshua Perek Yod, when we talk about the conquest of the southern part of Israel. And after Yehoshua, I'm just going the order of Yehoshua, after Yehoshua has successfully conquered Yericho and Ha'ai and made the Brit and Har Eval, and then the Givonim come and do their little shtick where they pretend that they're from far away, and Yehoshua signs a treaty with them, suddenly there are five kings in the southern area who get very scared of Yehoshua's army, for good reason, and they decide to attack not Yehoshua but the Givonim, because Yehoshua and the Givonim have made a pact, and that will be a way to sucker Yehoshua to bring his army, and you always want to fight on your terms. So that is to have them, draw them in, and then to go to war against them. Watch how it starts in source 2. V'ayichishmo Adoni Tzedek Melech Yerushalayim. Who starts this whole thing? A guy named Adoni Tzedek, who's the king of Yerushalayim. Okay, that's fine. That means there's a city called Yerushalayim in Yeshua's time. It's part of the land we're supposed to conquer. We haven't yet gotten to it. And the king of Yerushalayim starts a coalition with four other kings in the area, and they all go and they go and attack Givon, and then Yehoshua comes and attacks them. And you can see through this passage, very quickly, they get beat terribly. This is the whole Shemesh B'Givon Dome story. This is the whole hailstones coming out of the sky and killing the soldiers. This is that story. So when we chase these kings and their armies west and then south and end up in a cave, and then Yehoshua puts rocks in front of the cave, and then they bring the kings out and they kill them, and before they kill them they have the generals put their legs on the necks of the kings, and they say, this is how we're going to defeat the rest of these people. They make a big trophy killing, and that means that the king of Yerushalayim has been killed. That means Yerushalayim has been taken. And then we have this very bizarre passage. Turn the page. You would think at that point they would say, okay, good, Yerushalayim is ours, and now we're either going to settle it or we're not going to settle it. Very strange. When you look in Yehoshua Yud Bet, chapter 12, is the famous Baskin-Robbins list. All right, it's a list of 31 kings that we defeated in the wars, the Yehoshua, Melech Yericho, and five on the list is Melech Yerushalayim, which means the king of Yerushalayim has been destroyed. Yerushalayim should be ours. And again, at this point in Yehoshua, I'm reading Yehoshua in order, I don't know what anything that happens. I get to this point, I figure, Yerushalayim, check it off, it's one of our cities. It may not be the most important, the least important, I don't know, but it's ours. And then when you get to chapter 15, which is the first chapter of the division of the land that talks about what each tribe got, chapter 15 is the biggest, it is Yehuda. And it tells us the Yehuda has these 11 different sections and has these cities and these cities and these cities and all these cities. The last pasuk in this very long chapter, pasuk number 63, says, "V'tayivusi yoshvei Yerushalayim lo'yachlu v'nei Yehuda laharisham." The Yevusi who live in Yerushalayim, b'nei Yehuda couldn't dispossess them. Excuse me, didn't you just kill the king of Yerushalayim? What do you mean they couldn't dispossess them? And the Yevusi continue to live there ad hayom hazeh. Now, ad hayom hazeh, of course, in Tanakh, doesn't mean until 2019. It means till Sefer Yehoshua was published, the Yevusi still live there. Okay.
Wouldn't they have gone to their brothers to have helped get them out?
But they didn't. Case? Exactly. You mean Bnei Yehuda? Yehuda never needs any help. They're the most powerful ones, and yet they're not able to do it. It's very strange. In Shoftim, so the first chapter of Shoftim is something of a chronological overlap with Yehoshua. And in the first chapter it says something really strange. I mean, I'm setting you up, it's one strange thing after another. If you look through the history of Yerushalayim early in Tanakh, it's just bizarre. Because there's a record of war against a guy in a town called Bezek. They go to war against Bezek. Yeah, they're angry because of the utility bill. They go to war against Bezek, right? And they kill the king. They catch the king, Adoni Bezek, and they put, you read on your own, a terrible punishment that they give him, which he himself recognizes is poetic justice. They cut off his fingers and his toes, and they take him, strange, it's not from Bezek. Look at the yellow in source 5. Vayiviyuhu Yerushalayim. They bring Adoni Bezek to Yerushalayim, and he dies there. Strange thing. And by the way, what had Adoni Bezek just said? God has repaid me for what I did, because I did this to other kings. I cut off their fingers and toes. I have all these limbs under my table, so that's why it happened to me. They bring him to Yerushalayim. Very strange. And then, Vayilachamu v'nei Yehuda b'Yerushalayim. Then b'nei Yehuda go to war against Yerushalayim. If that's the case, why'd they bring Adoni Bezek there? And v'yilkuduota, they conquer it. V'yakuel fichar, they conquer it by the sword. V'tayir shalchu v'esh, they burn the city down. No, wait a second, I don't get it. If Yehuda burns the city down, then how is it that you can't dispossess the inhabitants? You just did. And as if to pour kerosene on this fire, in the same chapter it says, "V'tayivusi yoshev Yerushalayim lo rishu b'nei Binyamin." Now Yerushalayim is right on the border of Binyamin and Yehuda. Yehuda was not able to dispossess the Yevusi. Now we hear the Binyamin couldn't dispossess the Yevusi, and the Yevusi continued to live there. Ribono Shel Olam, what's going on here? It's a very strange thing. Now remember, Yevusi is one of the nations that we hear about throughout the Torah as one of the seven nations of the land. Hakanani, Amori, Barbizia, etc. Vahivusi. And yet, you hear about the Kanani and Prizi here and there. You hear about Girgashi, of course, famously disappears. You hear about the Chivi, you hear about the Chiti. Yevusi, you never hear about outside of Yerushalayim. Very strange. And it gets even better. In what we've talked about in the past is probably the goriest story in Tanakh, which is the story of Pilegesh B'Givah, you know, the concubine who gets all chopped up and zoom. Anyhow, so in that story, there is the story, the premise of the story, the setup of the story is that there's a guy who has a concubine. He gets angry at her, she runs away, she's afraid of him. For 4 months, they're separated. He finally comes down to Beit Lechem to collect her, and he's held over for a while by her father, who wants him to stay and have meals there. And finally, one day, he gets up to leave, and he leaves kind of late. All right, here's the setting. So now, if you take a look at source 7. So he's traveling. And he travels, and they get to Yevus. Yevus is Yerushalayim. Right? Yerushalayim. Heim im Yevus. They're right there by Yom Rad Meod, and the day is ending. The sun is setting. And by the way, the sun is setting means you cannot now pull into the local road rest area for an hour and take a shower there with the truckers and then move on. You got to get somewhere if the date is ending. So he's got a lad with him who says, let's go to this Yevusi city and we'll stay here. Vinalimba. This is Yerushalayim he's talking about. Irony of ironies, what does the guy say back? It's a goyish city. They're not from Israel. Let's go to Givah. That's a nice Jewish city. And that's, of course, where all the terrible stuff happens. Right, the irony of that is quick. There's one more passage before we get to ours, which is strange in the same way that the Adoni Bezek story is. David, what's David's early, most famous story? Early David. Goliath. David and Goliath. And David shows his wit and his flexibility and his ability to adjust to different circumstances and his courage and his cunning. All that great stuff. It's a great story. And it's such a great story, we spend a lot of time thinking about David's pronouncements and David's skill with the slingshot and everything else, that we miss a line that almost goes kind of under the radar. But it's a very weird line. This is David. Who is the king right now? Shaul. Where is the capital? There is no capital. Where is the center of things? Well, there's a center in Beit Lechem where David's family live. And there's a center in Givah, which is Shaul's family lives. And there's centers all over the place. And Shiloh is no longer a player. Shiloh has been destroyed, evidently. Okay. Nov is the city of Kohanim. David does not kill Goliath with the slingshot. he fatally wounds him. But then he comes over, and Goliath has fallen down. David takes Goliath's sword out of the scabbard, and he chops his head off, and that's the end of Goliath. Then he's dead, by the way. So, Dana Psikration. All right. Vaykach David et Rosh HaPlishti vayviehu Yerushalayim. What? David takes Goliath's head and takes it to Yerushalayim. Now, Goliath's head doesn't show up anymore. Goliath's sword shows up, but Goliath's head, he takes to Yerushalayim. What's he taking to Yerushalayim? So the simplest way to read this is the most awkward way, which is to say, this pasuk is a much later pasuk, means David kept it with his memorabilia, and before he sent it to Cooperstown, so when Yerushalayim became his capital, it came to Yerushalayim. But that's weird, because then it should say something about that, or it should say something about that later on, when David goes to Yerushalayim and he brought Goliath's head with him. It says it here. It's as if we're depositing sort of trophies of victory in Yerushalayim, even though it's not our city. Or it is our city, we've conquered it, and yet we're not living there, the Yusim are living there. What's going on? So I'd like to make the following suggestion. Looking down at source 14. We know that the city of Yerushalayim has a history which goes back to the time of Abraham. Because Abraham, and we know this documented both internally and externally, that the city of Shalem is the city of Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim. And when Abraham goes to war against, joins in the war with the kings, after he successfully saves the hostages and sends the kings away, Kilu, there's a detente between Abraham, the king of Sodom, and another guy. Who is this guy? Malkitzedek Melech Shalem. By the way, notice, Malkitzedek, and years later, who's the king of Shalem? Adoni Tzedek. Which means the city has some sort of a tradition about Tzedek relating to it. Malkitzedek Melech Shalem Hotzilach Vayain Vahu Kohen Le'El Elyon. What else do we hear about this king? This king is a Kohen Le'El Elyon. In other words, it's not a violation of boundaries for the king to be a Kohen. Maybe it's even part of the job requirement. That to be the Melech Shalem, you have to be Kohen Le'Elyon. Maybe, but at least he certainly is.
Wait, what does that mean?
A Kohen Le'Elyon?
Yeah.
He's a priest, either, if you want to read it in a certain way, he's a priest to Hashem. The simplest way of reading it is he's a priest to what's considered to be the highest god in the pantheon of Canaanite gods, El'Elyon. Avram, if you look carefully at his reaction to Melchizedek, he accepts it and he adds in Hashem's name, Hashem El Elyon, as if to switch the meaning. But the point is, he's a religious figure. The king, and we don't hear about any kings of anywhere else who play a role as a religious figure. They believe in a religion, they have their own priests, Paro certainly has his own priests, but they aren't themselves. He is, the king of Shalem is also a Kohen El Elyon.
We later hear about a lot of popes that think they're kings.
What?
So we later hear about a lot of popes that think they're kings.
And we hear about kings who are deified, right, later on. But in Tanakh itself, there's kings and then there's the religious functionaries, and they're not the same guy. But here, Melech Shalem, the one time we hear about Yerushalayim anywhere in Chumash, and he is a Kohen Le'Elyon. Very interesting thing. Last piece of the puzzle, and then to start filling everything in. The end of Sefer Shmuel has a story, which is a story about a plague. It's a plague that happens because David does a census. The last chapter of Shmuel, David decides he wants to do a census of the army. Yoav tries to tell him, why should you do it? Hashem will bless us. We'll have lots of people in the army. We don't need this. David insists. He does the census. And then Hashem sends the Navi and says to him, go ask David what punishment he wants. Does he want a plague? Does he want famine? Does he want to be chased by his enemies? David takes the plague and 70,000 people. That's a terrible story. Terrifying story. David and 70,000 people die. And then a malach appears over Yerushalayim. And God HaNavi, David's court prophet, says to him, go build a mizbeach at that spot where you see him. He sees him on a hill north of the city, looming over the city. And he says, go there and build a Mizbeach and offer up korbanot to Hashem. All right? Now, David has been king in Yerushalayim, king over all of Israel in Yerushalayim. Again, we have no idea why he picked Yerushalayim, but he's been king in Yerushalayim for a while. What?
33 years.
For 33 years. We don't know where in the 33 years this is, but it's not at the very beginning. And notice what the text says. He's been the king. This is the capital. In Yerushalayim, and notice what happens. Ve'avo God of David ve'emolo, alei akem la'adonai mizbeach begoren aravna ha'yivusi. So there's a fellow, aravna or non, depending on the Dvaramim, who is a Yevusi. The rest of the story. God says, go to his granary up there on the hill and build a mizbeach and offer up korbanot. That'll stop the plague. David then goes out with his entourage. Ornan ha'yivusi, aravna ha'yivusi, comes to David and says, what do you want? What does the king want? He bows. What does the king want? Which means, what's their relationship? I'm a Yevusi. I'm not Jewish, and yet I recognize you as the king, and yet I'm independent. And the Yevusi bows to him and says, what do you want? And David says, I want to buy this land from you so I can make a Mizbeach. And Ornan says, please, take it for free. Sounds familiar, like Avraham and Ephron. Take it for free, and I'll give you the animals that you see, and I'll give you the yokes. You can use it for wood. David says, absolutely not. I'm going to not bring free korbanot. I want to pay for it. And David pays for it, and he brings korbanot, and the plague stops, and it ends on a decent note, the end of the plague. There's a very strange thing going on here. That the capital city of David, the great warrior, is inhabited by Yevusim, and the Yevusim continue to live there as a regular social and cultural unit within the city. And David doesn't do anything about it. David certainly seems to be able to do something about it, but doesn't. Doesn't drive them out, doesn't extirpate them, or anything else. And it's Dafka on the site of the Goren owned by the Yevusi that the Beit HaMikdash is built. Because that's the spot of the Mikdash. It's wild. So I want to go to the troubling phrases in our Parsha, and I think that will open up the door for us. David comes to Yerushalayim. David does not attack Yerushalayim. He comes to Yerushalayim. Why is he coming to Yerushalayim? Because what I'm going to argue is that ever since then, ever since Yehoshua, Yerushalayim has been a city that we had free access to, that we had control over, but for some reason we never took. And we'll see what that reason is. And it goes back to Avram. And now, for the first time, David is the first one who has all of the nation come to him. The nation didn't come to Shaul. The nation came to Shmuel and said, get us a king. And when he announced Shaul, some of them didn't like him. The whole nation comes to David and said, you be our king. David says, oh, now we're ready to do something we haven't been able to do since Yehoshua. The last couple hundred years we couldn't do, we're ready to do it now. What's that? To inhabit Yerushalayim. Evidently, they always understood that Yerushalayim was a holy city, a special city, sort of like, to borrow from the partition plan, an international city, meaning not a sovereign city. And it was held that way. And the Yevusi were sort of like the caretakers. And therefore, we conquer the city, we hold the city, but we're not going to try to take over the city. And that's what's happening in Yerushalayim. Now what happens afterwards? David finally is ready to move in. But moving in just means moving in. The Yevusi turn to David and say, you can come, but you have to realize this is a holy city. And as a holy city, that means that you can't bring the lame and the blind. Who are the lame and the blind? So most commentators think it's talking about people who are lame and blind. Or somebody recently wrote an article where they suggested that what the Yevusi were saying to David is you have to get rid of all the lame and blind people in your entourage, otherwise we won't let you in, and David has to do it, and that's why they hate David, and David hates them, and it's all a very bizarre thing, and I don't think that's what's happening. Iver u'Pisach is a pair that shows up in two contexts. It shows up in the context of people. In 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago in the Parsha, we heard about a coin being having a balmum, ish ivero piseach. We hear about it in Yirmiyahu Lamed Aleph, that when the people are all going to come, ivero piseach bam, the lame and the blind will all come and return to in the gula. True. But it's not the only place ivero piseach shows up. Ivero and piseach as a pair also show up in the context of mumim of animals. On Monday morning, we're going to read, here in Chutz Laretz, we're going to read the Kriyat HaTorah from Re'eh that talks about a Bechor. Call a Bechor, Asher Yivaled, V'chazah, Zachar, Tachdish, Adonai, Zachar, Lo tavo b'chor sharacha, v'lo tavo goes b'chor tzonacha. And then the third pasuk is, v'chiev omum, next three words, piseach o iver. And in Malachi, say, take a look at it in passage number 10. In Malachi, when he is rebuking the people for their pathetic offerings that they're bringing, what he says is, v'chi tagishun iver lizboach ein ra v'chi tagishu piseach b'chol ein ra. You bring a blind animal and you think it's okay. You bring a lame animal and it's okay.
So you're saying this doesn't reflect people?
That's what I think it doesn't.
What do you think
it is? So I'll tell you what I think it is. And I'll tell you what the other reason I think it is. Notice the verb that the Yebusim use. Now, I don't know that the Yebusim are talking Hebrew. But I know the verb that the author of Shmuel wanted us to read. Lo tavo hinakim hasircha. Lahasir means to move away. Lahasir is overwhelmingly used in the context of getting rid of avodah zarah. Right, so, such as the Chiyasur Levavchem, all right, or famously in Vayayim Shamoa, Penya Visartem Vavatem Lehim Acharim. But it's also used in two contexts in the story of Yaakov, which are very close to each other, and relate to two things. When Yaakov and his family come down from Shechem towards Beit El, he says Hasiru at Elohei Anichar. Take a look at it in source 12. Right? Get rid of the idols that you have, similarly from Shechem. But above that, in the negotiations that Lavan made with Yaakov, the word Lahasir is used twice, once in the directive, and the other time is when it describes what Yaakov did. Lahasir, to separate animals, the spotted animals from the non-spotted animals. So Lahasir could mean to get rid of Avodah Zarah, but it can also mean to get rid of animals. I think that what the people are saying to David is, you cannot bring improper animals here because this entire place is holy. You want to come in here, you can come in here. You can move in here. You can make it your capital. After all, you've held it the whole time. But we are the caretakers of the sanctity of this place, so we're telling you what the rules are. What does David do? He complies. And so what is David says, V'tapischim v'ta'ivrim snuei nefesh David. What David does is he adopts this position and says, you know what, I'm ready to move up the ladder here and say, since we're regarding this entire city as a holy place that goes all the way back to Malkut Tzedek, Kohen Le'el Elyon, therefore we're going to make a rule that there can be not only no Baal Mum on the Mizbeach, I'm going to accept their position, which is no animals that are disfigured can even come into the city.
Where did you just read
right?
That? What number?
What?
What number did you just read?
I was reading from the main text. Right? And then Alkein Yomru Ivero Fisech Lo Yavol Abayit. Notice. That's why there was some sort of a saying in David's time that you can't allow a lame or blind animal even to come into the house. Habayit could be a reference to the Mikdash, but it can't because that's not in David's time. Habayit can be in David's house, or it could be a way of saying into Yerushalayim, into our city. We don't allow that in. And so what David was essentially doing is saying, after all these years, we're ready now that the nation is unified to go and inhabit and establish ourselves in that city that's always been sort of terra sancta. Now we're ready to go inhabit it. But the caretakers tell them, here's the rules. And David accepts the rules.
How did they get that rule?
They evidently, we don't know. But evidently they had that rule as a tradition.
Why would they be one of the seven nations along with that rule?
A good, interesting question. But notice that at no point do we go to war against the Yebusi.
Right.
And no point do we attack them. The Chivi we attack, the Chiti we attack, the Amori and Kanani and Prizi we have attacked, but Gadol. Girgashi evidently is gone. The Yebusi seem to have one place where they're settled. And they're settled in Yerushalayim, and they seem to have this function. And at no point do we go to war against them. The opposite. Instead of David coming up to our Vanah Yebusi and saying, you're a Yebusi, I'm killing you, I'm taking over. Instead, he says, I'm not going to take the free place, I'm going to pay you for it. And the Yebusim continue to live there as, if you will, the caretakers of this holy place, and we've now moved in. And I believe that that's what's going on in this very surprising and strange parak. We still have to deal with the whole statement of Yigabat Sinor, but that's a whole other shir.
So can the lame and blind people come in?
Sure. It shouldn't have anything to do with people. It should have nothing with people. Right? Should have to do, I'm arguing that especially the word Hesircha, and the fact that, why would David accept such a position and saying, if I have people in my entourage who who are disfigured or have been blinded in war or whatever, to suddenly say they can't come in and join, why would that be? But with the animals, I'm certainly comfortable taking a position. What?
It's not a physical element. It's a spiritual element.
So,
they were trying to avoid for them to come to Yerushalayim.
Which means what? What are you arguing?
But they were saying that, the Yehudim were saying that we don't want people who are spiritually crippled, if you will, into Yerushalayim.
Right, but then, why would David agree to that? In other words, either these are people who shouldn't have been with David.
He wants to keep the Kedusha of Yerushalayim as well.
Right, so in other words, you're accepting the premise that there is like rules of the Kedusha of Yerushalayim, and it's part of a negotiated interaction, it's not a war. In the middle, David does go to war and conquers the Acropolis. That's different, that's the Mitzudat Zion, and the text distinguishes between them. But I believe that that's what happened. So you're saying that maybe they mean it in some sort of metaphoric way. The problem, of course, is reading a metaphor into a text is always a challenge unless you have a key to that. But I'd rather read it literally.
Use the word lame and blind for spiritual deficiency? I don't know.
Yeah, that would be, I don't know. So in any case, hopefully we've had a little more insight into the story of the conquest of Yerushalayim. And again, this year was given in memory of Nechama Rivlin Zal. It should be Aliyah Neshama for somebody who was a...
What happened in the